Blog Talk Radio.
It's the one and only Charlotte Line back with you tonight. It's Tuesday as usual, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. So glad to be here. I'm Dr. John. My buddies are here. In order of how they called in tonight, Brady Van Sickle from Des Moines, Iowa, from war-torn, strife-ridden Des Moines. How are you doing tonight?
I got to say, John, it's been a rough week. My heart's been hurting for the country, and there's nothing I wanted to do more than just, kind of put the world to rest for just a little bit and just talk racing with you and Zach. It's going to be a much-needed break from a very sobering reality we found ourselves in this week, so I'm happy to be here.
Been a mess. Well, we are glad to have you here, and I'm glad to be able to not think about work and not think about everything else and get to talk about the Charlotte Line. Good you're here, man. Take care, and let me bring on from Studio G, Greenville, South Carolina, Zach Beechler. How you doing, Zach?
I am exhausted. I went to Charlotte today, came back, and woke up from a nap from someone calling me.
Must have been Dr. John.
Man, there's a possibility.
I'm glad I called you to make sure you were here. Glad you're around. So what did you do? And I'm going to start it off. You tell us. What did you do in Charlotte?
Well, the company I work for, a go-karting company, was like, hey, let's go to Charlotte to another go-karting company. It's kind of funny, but it is we went to a fun track called GoPro Motor Complex, and actually, not in the heart of Charlotte, it's more north in Mooresville, where a lot of NASCAR drivers not just live, but also have their teams based out of, and met quite a few drivers today, a lot of them running in the Truck Series, and even a Cup Series driver today.
Oh, okay, great. So what are we talking about? There's a bunch of racing stuff been going on.
Thankfully, we've been getting kind of back to normal. This weekend we were at Bristol, Tennessee for both the Cup race and Cup and the Xfinity Series. We're kind of almost getting back to a regular set schedule. And it was quite interesting. Still odd running a race with no fans, but the racing action is still there. Fantastic race action.
Zach,
had, but
can you speak up
there.
Just a little bit, please?
Yes, sorry. We're kind of getting back to normal with the racing action. And even though there was no fans at Bristol, boy howdy, that didn't stop the drivers from going like it was jam-packed.
Oh, no, we saw some great racing action this weekend, Zach. And honestly, it stretches back to even last Thursday, the day after our last show, where we had the rained-out ALSCO Uniforms 500, the second race at Charlotte for the Cup Series last week. And that was kind of a barn burner, too. The complete opposite of what we had to talk about with the Coke 600, where you and I both kind of lamented that it got really strung out and we didn't see a whole lot of good racing action. But after two support series and the 600 miles, the track was primed. The PJ1 was what it needed to be, and we saw a great race Thursday. And then that carried us off into a weekend of short track racing. I mean, how can you fault a good weekend of racing at Bristol Motor Speedway? So I don't know, Zach, you say we want to start with the ALSCO 500 first?
I think we should start there, and, well, we finally got some closure. Well, by we, I mean Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott finally clinched a win, and even though it wasn't the Coke 600, it wasn't the crown jewel, it was still something, and, boy, I mean, the relief on Chase's face when he finally got the checkered flag and won this race, it truly was something different, I think.
Oh, yeah, no, and it wasn't just Chase that got some good closure. A lot of drivers, I noticed, had a season statement-making night where a lot of drivers, like Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is the first one that comes to mind, who have struggled, running some bad luck, maybe outdriven their equipment at times, and it's bit them. And they've had, especially Stenhouse, if you look at his four results since coming back from the break, he's had so many crashes, bad cars, and then he goes into the last Thursday's race and steals a fourth place after running in the top 10 and 5 for most of the event. If you look a little further down, Austin Dillon comes to mind too. He's kind of had a mixed bag results of the season, but him and his teammate Tyler Reddick, they were solidly in the top 5 and 10 all night long, and Austin Dillon held on for a solid 8th place. So it was definitely the tone of the evening. Drivers, you know, either getting that closure in Chase Elliott's book on finally being able to close the deal, or drivers that finally getting their season pointed in the right direction.
It's definitely it was a crazy race it was weird because we didn't have the past couple Coke 600s. I feel it's kind of been a little more tame than normal. You know, normally for a 600-mile race, we tend to have a lot more action-packed, a lot more beating and banging, this and that. And then this race was quite the opposite. I mean, there was action everywhere we've seen it. It's not people just jockeying for position, but actually battles going on left and right. And you're right, that traction compound finally got its fair usage after having an Xfinity, a cup or a truck race, the rubber compound actually sticking now, it kind of helped it and gave it that more, I guess it gave this race a lot more oomph to it. I guess drivers were a little more comfortable, I feel, because we weren't waiting on, oh, well, the rain's kind of dry and this and that, but we actually got drivers being able to be bottom, middle, high, right off the bat, and that helped with a lot of drivers' strategy, I feel, too.
Well, and I'm looking at the Racing Reference breakdown. In comparison to the Coke 600, we're going to compare some of the stats from it to really just show you how much the action picked up in just the span of those four short days. So the Coke 600, it was ran over 405 laps, and the Alstow 500 was ran over a course of 208 laps, so almost exactly half the distance of what we saw last Sunday. And if you look at it, we had a total of 20 lead changes throughout the entirety of 600 miles for the Coke 600. Compared that to 14 lead changes in the almost 312-mile, 500-kilometer race on Thursday. That's a huge markup in just the amount of competition we were having for the lead. But then you even look at the green flag passes. Over the course of the 300-mile race on Thursday, we had 2,120 green flag passes, which averaged out to about 12.4 passes per green flag lap. But if you compare that to last Sunday's race in the Coke 600, we had 2,676 over 600 miles, so only 200 green flag passes more in twice the distance, which that averaged out to 7.6 passes per green flag lap. And so if you just boil it down to those two numbers, you can see a major difference there, even in the amount of on-track action we had. We had 8 cautions in the Sunday race, 3 of those were for the stage end, and 1 being for the competition caution. So 4 of them being, you know, mandated by NASCAR, not thrown for any incidents. Compare that to last Thursday, you had 7, so 1 caution flag left in half the distance. The drivers, they were all on top of each other. The grip was there, and sometimes they went over the line, and it was just mind-boggling that we could see that big of a difference in the same racetrack over the course of just 4 days. And granted, it also rained heavily on Wednesday, so it was a green racetrack. Like, all the rubber that had been put down by the Coke 600, by the 2 support races for the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series, had been completely washed away. And we still had much better racing on Thursday. So it's really a testament to those of you out there wondering what the benefit of practice is, aside from giving drivers more time to adjust their cars. It's also more time for the track to get really worked in, to accept the rubber and get the racing surface raceable. And without practice, that's what I firmly believe led to a pretty much a snooze fest of a Coke 600. But then a few days later, after we had some on-track action to really work the track in, the race was completely a 180 difference.
You're right. And you know, that was something I loved seeing, but watching the racing action take place was, I think maybe this was the drivers were a little more comfortable off the track because they got to feel it out on Sunday. They had actually identical conditions, timing and stuff was a little off, weather was a little different, obviously, But still, like, okay, this is how the track was when we started the race on the Coke 600. Cool, we know what we're kind of dealing with. And man, I think a lot of it. Huh?
I was gonna say it definitely showed.
Yeah, and the one thing I want to say too is that we had a lot of drivers who were up there during the 600 were still up there in this race, but I don't know. I feel like the racing action was a lot better because they had. I'm wondering this: if they hadn't put down that PJ stuff this time without before Thursday night's race, would the drivers have been just as comfortable, and would we see as much racing action?
Did they apply more PJ? Because I thought they had just applied the one application before the 600, but I didn't think they retouched up the track with that traction compound.
They did a little bit. They didn't put a whole bunch because the Xfinity and truck and the Cup guys did seal in a little more of it with some rubber, but they put down just a little bit, not a lot, just to make sure that there was something there. But it, still, if they had, if let's say it was totally green, none of that compound, you know, no rubber, just a pure clean green racetrack, kind of what we would get the moment they would get, all the teams would get there for like practice and stuff. How gutsy would some of these drivers really be?
The other thing that really stood out to me about Thursday's race was the drivers that, you know, took their 600 setup, learned the data from what they learned over those 600 miles, tweaked it, and came out of the gates swinging. The biggest thing that comes to my mind would be Kevin Harvick. I mean, he didn't have a bad 600 by any means. He was kind of quiet throughout the night and came away with a very respectable fifth. But for most of that race on Thursday, he looked like an absolute threat and looked like the odds-on favorite. He had the car set up beautifully at the beginning of the race, and those early stages where we were getting a lot of cautions in the first two stages, a lot of short runs, it really helped the Ford team because his car was clearly set up for short runs and was absolutely untouchable. But what became his undoing was that final stint. We got our last caution flag on lap 145. That was, and we got our restart on lap 150. That's roughly about 58 laps, so basically a full fuel run. It was really the only full fuel run that we had all night, and Kevin Harvick's car just did not keep up. He stormed out of the gate right on the restart, just like he did the entire night, and had a commanding lead over Chase Elliott. But as those laps wore down, and we got past like the 30-lap mark of being on that set of tires, his advantage just completely went away, and he dropped like a rock. He fell all the way to 10th place under green flag conditions where he had built up probably a 10-second lead over the 10th place driver at one point. The handling was just completely gone, and that was something that was super fascinating to me because we didn't see it all night. We had so many short runs that Kevin Harvick's car looked invincible, but once we finally got that long stint, ironically at the very end of the race, you know, the adjustments weren't there, and the Harvick machine completely faded into obscurity, opening the door for Chase Elliott to storm away and take that much-needed win for the 19.
And that was something very interesting, was the fact that, you know, Kevin Harvick just fell as a rock, and it's surprising because Kevin is not really a driver to have that kind of issue. He's not someone to really be like, you know, I'll say like this, he wouldn't use up the equipment he has that hard. I mean, he had a pretty decent lead at one point, and then all of a sudden he just starts to fall and fall and fall. And you're right, this was a, you know, it essentially was a full fuel run, but it was so weird that to see Kevin Harvick go from dominating the race, because he led for 63 laps, the most of any driver, and he fell back finishing 10th. Mind-boggling. You know, it just was like a flick of the switch. All of a sudden, the car starts fading back and back and back. Chase Elliott getting hammered, Ryan Blaney. All these guys passing him to just go to 10th, and it was very surprising. I think Johnson was right on his heels and was going to get another. If one more lap. That was such a strange thing, you know. The other drivers to lead, Chase lead on one bike. Blaney, who led two laps. Joey Logano leading 42 laps. We have, of course, Kevin Harvick leading 63. Also, William Byron leading 11. Matt DiBenedetto leading 10. And then way in the back in the 31st spot, he had a really good run for him. And then all of a sudden, he just fell like a rock right towards the end. He maybe scrubbed the wall, didn't he?
No, he popped the wall really good. He was trailing Harvick and honestly looked like the only driver that could keep up with Harvick on a short run. And he stepped outside the cushion off of turn two, and he put the car hard into the outside wall. And from there, his race was completely undone. He couldn't recover. And like you said, he fell all the way back to 31st, which was just absolutely gut-wrenching because he even led stage two. Like, he was in prime position. The 88 car was hooked up and was looking for that second win of the season, but it just went away from him. And, you know, it's interesting you actually bring up Bowman here. The thing that stood out to me most when I was listening to the broadcast was they were talking about, you know, who's been good this season, who have been the drivers you've seen out front. And I completely did not catch this until Mike Joy said it, but Alex Bowman has won the most stages so far in 2020, and he's led the most laps. He doesn't have the finishes or the multiple wins to really showcase that effort, but like I go back to my rant a couple weeks ago on this podcast. Alex Bowman, of the 400 drivers, is not getting his due. He only got that one-year extension, but this year he has been the class of that team. Chase Elliott finally joined him in the winner's circle, but the 9 team has not shown near the consistency as far as speed-wise as the 88 team, and Bowman's just quietly going about business and racking up those good results. I'd just be so angry if this gets completely overlooked and, you know, he only gets that one-year extension, because I full adamantly believe that if any of the 400 drivers that deserve a spot, you know, obviously Chase Elliott with his 6 wins in the last 2 years, now 7 with his win this last Thursday, makes him the odds-on favorite to keep re-signing. But Bowman should definitely, in my mind, be above William Byron in that conversation, because the results are speaking for themselves. And I just hope he and crew chief Greg Ives continue to build on that chemistry and continue to keep proving me right, because I always like to be proven right, you know?
Don't we all?
Well, you are right. You know, Alex Bowman has been quietly, and it is quietly, besides his win at Auto Club this year, quietly been sweeping up, you know, points left and right from stage wins to stage points to leading a lot of laps. And I think he's finally gotten not just comfortable in his equipment, but also comfortable with his team. I mean, that's a big thing when it comes to racing. You know, he took over for Dale Earnhardt Jr. after he left in 2017, and you know, he ran 10 races for the 88 when he had his concussion the year prior. So I think he's finally gotten into that. It's like, okay, this is how these cars work. I feel like this new body, you know, even though it's not a huge change, there's a change that he's got a lot more comfortable with, you know, in I think now he's finally gotten, okay, I can really give it my all, really give it hard and really go for it. And he's proven that, you know, like you said, he doesn't have the multiple wins drivers do. And, you know, he and Chase Elliott have a win. That's still impressive. And Chase, it's not like he's been sitting back. He has been racing hard, and it shows ever since we've been back, since Darlington, that he's been racing really hard, having two opportunities to win some big events, you know, the second race Darlington and then winning this one. I think Hendrick Stable for those two cars are now getting more comfortable with their Chase. Obviously really is getting 7 wins in the past 3 years, I'm sorry. And Alex now getting his second win and cleaning up stages left and right so far this year. I feel that those two are going to be very comfortable for the rest of the year and will probably be fighting for a championship, if not be in the top 8 before the season goes into the final four.
I definitely wouldn't be surprised there at all, and I'm going to be keeping my eye on him. But it's not just the Hendrick Motorsports program that I see as having a marked improvement. Like, this is the most competitive I've seen the Hendrick equipment since, honestly, 2017, 2016. Those first 2 years with the Camaro, they just were behind the eight ball, And I think a lot of the success this year has to be attributed to that brand new Camaro body. It was just the slightest tweaks in rounding out the nose a little bit and squaring off the rear bumper. Like, those are really the only artificial changes you can plainly notice when you look at the brand new Camaro ZL1 body package they have for 2020. But those small changes have made Chevy really the story of the year as far as the manufacturers go. Ford's been consistently the best manufacturer in my books, arguably since 2018, and Toyota right there, you know, dicing back and forth. But this year, Toyota is starting to show a little bit of, you know, chinks in the armor. Their cars aren't showing that advantage that they were showing when they introduced this brand new body style that they currently campaigned back in 2017. And quickly to fill that void, the Chevy teams have shown up. The Hendrick drivers, they're fast week in and week out. Bad luck aside, you're having at least several times throughout the event, three, maybe even all four Hendrick cars in the top 10 at any one given time. So their program has definitely improved. But then also the Ganassi boys. Ganassi last year was carrying the banner for Chevy, and even in 2018 they carried the banner. And this year with Kurt Busch, he's, you know, really settled in well to that number one team and really is gelling well with his new crew guys. Matt Kenseth, he's having a couple bit of struggles in the last couple races, but he's been, you know, on a steep learning curve. But even he's showing speed in a brand new environment and, you know, with a lot of catching up to do. So I just feel like the Chevy program as a whole has definitely turned the corner. And for all you Bowtie fans out there, this is the year you've been waiting patiently on for the last 3 years, the year they finally figure out this Camaro and finally are going to be back to the Chevy that was dominant throughout the course of you and I growing up, Zach. Like, Chevy was the manufacturer for the bulk of our childhood throughout the 2000s and early 2010s, and they're looking to get back to that point of winning.
Yeah, it is interesting how I think it's kind of a rotation. You know, one manufacturer will struggle for a year or two, then the next year they'll exceed or you'll see them build back up. And it's not like Toyota has ever not been successful, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, this year, yes, they do have a win with, you know, with the Daytona 500, Denny Hamlin getting that. But other than that, you know, we haven't seen Kyle Busch in victory lane. We haven't seen Martin Truex Jr. We haven't seen a lot out of the Toyota camp. You know, yes, they have two cars that finished in the top five. Denny Hamlin finished second, and Martin Truex Jr. finishing ninth in the top 10. But it's odd because you don't see Kyle Busch up there as much. And Kyle is a wheelman. I mean, that's unstated. I mean, you don't have to say anything about Kyle Busch. You can say all you want. He's arrogant, he's this or that, but he can wheel. Even he seems to be struggling this year, and you pointed that out in an earlier podcast. So, you know, I think Toyota might be in a phase of just like uncertainty or having to maybe rebuild or restructure this car just a little bit so that way they can have a competitive feel for them.
Exactly. No, I feel like they're onto something, but yeah, there's just that little missing ingredient. But we're almost wrapped up here on the Alsco 500. Still plenty of racing action to get to. So let's just take you through that full field rundown. Chase Elliott did come away with the victory. Denny Hamlin followed him across the line second. Ryan Blaney, continuing to put up solid results, came home in third. Ricky Stenhouse, like we mentioned earlier, a very much needed top five for the 47 crew. They came home in fourth. Kurt Busch rounded out your top five. Joey Logano came across the line in sixth. Brad Keselowski in seventh. Austin Dillon came home with eighth. Martin Truex Jr. in ninth. And Kevin Harvick rounded out the top 10. In 11th, we had Jimmy Johnson and the 48 crew. His teammate, William Byron, came home in 12th. The top-performing rookie, once again, John Hunter Nemechek, with a solid 13th finish. You got to keep your eye on that boy. He's really taking it to that rookie class this year. Tyler Reddick followed him across the line in 14th. Matt DiBenedetto in 15th. Clint Bowyer came across the line 16th, a much-needed improvement over his horrendous run in the Coke 600. Ryan Newman came across the line 17th. Cole Custer in the 18th position. Corey LaJoie 19th, and Eric Almirola in 20th. In 21st position, we had Christopher Bell, Chris Buescher in 22nd, Matt Kenseth in 23rd, Ryan Preece 24th, Michael McDowell in 25th, Eric Jones came across the line 26th, Ty Dillon followed him in 27th, Daniel Suarez 28th, and Kyle Busch all the way down the running order had a pretty rough night, went a lap down and came across the line in 29th, and Gray Galding rounded out the top 30 there. Alex Bowman, like we mentioned earlier, has had his struggles, bounced off the wall and finished 31st. Quinn Hoffman, 32nd. Timmy Hill, 33rd. J.J. Yaley in 34th. B.J. McLeod in 35th. Josh Balicki, 36th. Bubba Wallace had a really good run going before his night came undone after he popped the outside wall. He came across the line 37th. Brendan Poole also exited the event early after a crash. He came home in 38th. Joey Gase, in 39th. And Garrett Smithley finished in 40th.
Well, after two big races at Charlotte, they decided to go short track racing on a Sunday. And what better place to go than Bristol, Tennessee, just under 4 hours away. And for the Food City 500, or the Food City Presents the Supermarket Heroes 500, and you can't say nothing else, but holy cow, it truly was short track racing.
Honestly, it was the closest to watching a race at Bristol from my youth that I've gotten with the Gen 6 car in the entirety of that car's existence. Like, we had, you know, the old school bump and run going. Drivers were able to get some good runs off the top line. Just multiple skirmishes, beating and banging, and just an absolute thrilling lead up to the finish. Like, it was everything that NASCAR fans tune in for a short track race. And I could not have been pleased, especially when you look at last year's two Bristol races. In my mind, they were two of the most disappointing races of the entire 2019 season. That the high downforce package just completely ruined Bristol racing. The dirty air was just so much and just so insurmountable that you could not make passes last year, and it showed. The races were boring. The drivers were just kind of stuck in single file formation. And that's not what people tune into Thunder Valley for. That's not why Bristol is regarded as being the last great Coliseum, being the mecca of speed that it is. And Sunday, we got our Bristol race that we deserved. We had 17 cautions for 102 laps, 21 lead changes, an average of 6 green flag passes per lap. It was everything I wanted it to be, and I could not have been more pleased.
Even though there wasn't a lot of drivers who had led, it's not like they just sat there. I mean, there was quite a lot of laps that they led. You had Brad Keselowski, who won, leading 115 laps. Kyle Busch, who led 100 laps. One of the first times he actually led, but his teammate, Denny Hamlin, led 131 laps. You had Joey Logano, who had led 2 laps, Chase Elliott, leading for 88 laps, Matt Benedetto again doing some leading, only 4 laps, but still something there, and then Ryan Blaney, he really finished dead last in a crash, led 60 laps, and, you know, it's quite interesting to look at how many laps that they led, but then you go down to the lead changes. And it's not like they just was 100 laps in a row, 100 laps in a row. No, the most laps that one driver led at a time was right off the bat, Brad Keselowski leading 62 laps. And then after that, it just was 1 lap, 4 laps, 20 laps, 30 laps, 1, 50. It just bounced back and forth, which is amazing to see.
And that was the key to what made this race so good. If the drivers, when they got the lead, they weren't running away with it. We were constantly seeing at least 2, maybe 3 or 4 cars fighting for the lead in close proximity within a second at Bristol. And that was what made that race so compelling. Even though a driver may have planted himself out front and was having a pretty good control of the race, he was one mistake away, one bad instance where he caught the lap car at the wrong position from completely either going from first to second, or in some cases going from the lead all the way back to fourth or fifth. That's what made this race good. The race was close. It was tight. The drivers were on top of each other all afternoon long. And I got to say, it broke my heart for Bad Luck Blaney. The man just cannot catch a break this season, but he cannot catch a break at the Bristol race. This is the second race that I can think of where he dominated those first few stages, obviously had one of the better cars, and then just completely got taken out. In an incident, this one was kind of more driver error because he got up out of the cushion into some of the loose stuff, lost control and was just in the way, and Ty Dillon had nowhere to go. Like, that one was just an unfortunate circumstance. But, man, if I just can count the number of races on my hand so far that I feel like Blaney should have won in 2020, it hurts because he can't catch a break, Zach. He just can't catch a break.
It's a lot like him and Chase. And, yeah, I mean, finishing dead last but still had a lot of points from the stages. Yeah, I mean, he finished second for the second stage. And, man, it – huh? Or first stage, you're right. I'm sorry. So it definitely is like – him and Chase Elliott are very similar, it seems like, where even though, yes, Chase had his redemption at Charlotte – I want to see Ryan get his redemption soon because him and Chase had very similar, I want to say similar races, you know, going for wins, bad luck gets them. It just continues for Ryan though, you know, but that's good because he's still a patient guy. He's not like he's just going to be like, well, you know, this is just stupid, blah, blah. He's like, you know what? That's just kind of racing sometimes. And he didn't blame anyone but himself and said, you know, it's a racing thing, kind of like how Jimmy Johnson said at Darlington the first race back. And it's, you know, he learns from it and he continues to go on. And he'll fight hard, you know. It's not like he's just going to let this eat at him. He's just going to be like, you know what, I'm just going to continue and work hard. And, you know, we've seen a lot of different drivers have that kind of attitude. And by the way, rookies still are killing it. Ninth place, Christopher Bell, top 10 for him in that car, which, by the way, that car, or that team, I should say, the 95, finished second in last year's Food City 500 with Matt DiBenedetto, and it was around that time that Matt actually found out he'd be losing his ride and then would go on to the Wood Brothers. And then John Hunter Nemechek, again, a solid 13th finish. The equipment he has is not used to running up this high for that many times. And then his teammate, my favorite, Michael McDowell, finishing 14th. What is it with some of these underdog drivers and these underdog teams just killing it so far this year?
I really feel like that with the package we're getting to, with the, you know, having split aero packages for different racing styles, it's really opening the door for the Gen 6 car to be the versatile, you know, field leveling car that it was designed to at the beginning. And it's really benefiting teams like Front Row Motorsports, you know, now that we've had so many years to develop and tweak on it. And I really think a lot of those smaller teams are benefiting from younger presences. Front Row Motorsports, they are so lucky to have a talent like John Hunter Nemechek. The youth, the exuberance he brings, the perspective, to combine that with a veteran like Michael McDowell, that pairing is what I think is really helping elevate that program, because they've never had such a stout driver combo. Usually they've had like one really good driver and a couple meh drivers at any one time, but this is the first time I feel like that program has the benefit of two really high-class caliber drivers. Same with Levine Family Racing. They just continue to keep building as they just keep elevating the driver talent that's behind the wheel of their cars. I mean, you go from from Scott Speed in your first few years, a driver that not many people will listen to this podcast probably even remember, to Casey Kane, to last year Matt DiBenedetto, and now the hottest Xfinity rookie to ever come out of the series in Christopher Bell. Like, that program is definitely benefiting from that level of exposure and experience. And the thing that's really standing out to me, though, is the two drivers that you see in the points that have done the best so far through the, what is this, nine. So of the nine races we've run so far this season, we have two drivers, only two rookies, in the top 20. Tyler Reddick, which is not a huge surprise. I mean, the RCR program has been kind of really a former shell of itself for the last two decades, if we're being completely honest. But Reddick's having some solid runs so far in that H Chevrolet, definitely a much improved position for that team compared to where they were a year ago. And he's still sitting solidly in the 18th position in points, not that far out of a possible chase berth. And then just two positions behind him, you have John Hunter Nemechek. It's not Christopher Bell driving for basically a Joe Gibbs satellite team. It's not Cole Custer driving for Stuart Haas. It's little John Hunter Nemechek and that Front Row Motorsports team as the second highest rookie in points. And I think that really speaks volumes to what John Hunter Nemechek is bringing to that team. He's bringing the consistency that he is used to showing in the lower divisions, and he takes care of his equipment. When he spent the bulk of his Truck Series career driving for family-owned equipment, you know that he was racing out there to really protect it, because it was his family members that would be working on the car if he bent it up. It'd be himself wrenching those wrenching underneath the car, straightening out the fenders if he made a mistake. And that upbringing, I think, is what's really helping John Hunter Nemechek in these first few runs in his Cup Series career. He knows how to take care of the cars. And we're seeing so far in these first 9 races, especially the races since coming back from the COVID break, that a lot of drivers are making mistakes. A lot of drivers, you know, are putting themselves in bad situations, you know, and hurting their chances at solid runs. And that's where a driver like John Hunter Nemechek shines. By keeping his car out of trouble, by keeping it clean, he can capitalize and move up the leaderboard as others around him make mistakes. And even though he's got arguably the lowest, you know, quality of equipment of the 4 drivers right now that are the favorites for the Rookie of the Year title, he is outperforming week in and week out because he knows how to take care of his equipment and get the finishes that that equipment will bring him.
Yeah, and that's what's crazy to me. You know, Tyler Reddick, by the way, it's crazy to see him because he never really had a, as far as I can recall, he didn't go from a full-time truck to a full-time Xfinity to a full-time Cup. In fact, he kind of went back and forth on stuff. He ran full-time for Brad Keselowski Racing and then kind of had a thing with Chip Ganassi, never a full-time gig. Then he's like, you know what, screw it. Figured out his own plan, became a 2-time champion in the Xfinity Series and the only driver to do it for 2 different teams back-to-back. And right now, running 18th in points, was it 19 points behind, or I'm sorry, 21 points behind Nemechek. And Nemechek kind of had a little more of a head start to this Cup stuff. I know that, you know, Tyler Reddick had more, or did a couple races in CR equipment, but John did 3 races back to back to back. He finished out the 2019 season in Furniture Row, and it's just crazy to see how, or Front Row, I'm sorry, it's just crazy to see how both those drivers have really taken the opportunity of moving up to the Cup level to show what they're capable of and show how hard they really can go. And you know, even though they didn't have, or even though both Christopher Bell and John Hunter Nemechek were the only 2 rookies to finish in the top 15, that doesn't take away the fact that, you know, the rookie class is still having a great battle no matter the track they're going to at this point and no matter how hard they're going to race. Even looking in the top 5, it's a variety of drivers who've been in there for a while, but still, I think this rookie class might be a surprise and we might get a rookie winner this year.
Honestly, this I feel like is the best shot we've had of having a multiple rookie winning season. Oh God, when was the last time we had multiple rookies winning in a season? Oh damn, that might have been 2002. So I'm trying to think. In 2006, Denny was the only one that won, and I think in 2005, Kyle was the only one that won. So I'm thinking this is the first legitimate shot we have. Had a multiple rookie win season since 2002.
That would make a lot of sense. You know, that is when Jimmy Johnson came onto the scene and started racing. So it's just a fantastic racing season. This race itself was crazy on its own. You know, a lot of cautions for, you know, 20% of the race we were under caution, and just how many times we went under caution because of, you know, wrecks and competitions and spins. I want to highlight one. It was one that had, I'm trying to think of which one it was, but it was one where there was quite a few cars coming to, or on the 3, I think it was in 3 and 4. The big thing I remember from it is that Greg Golding somehow managed to slip between the wall and between another car. I think it was the 13, and somehow didn't get a scratch on the car. Do you remember what wreck I'm talking about?
Trying to think which one that was. It could have easily been the one where the 12 and 13 had their accident coming off of turn two, and I think you're right that he might have snuck right by the Geico Chevy trying to maneuver out of the way and making contact with the 12. But I'm not sure which incident that was. But you're hitting the nail right on the head. We had a lot of really big accidents. We actually had, what is that, two accidents with five-plus cars involved in it. We had a couple big ones at Bristol. And usually if we see a big one at Bristol, maybe one. But no, we saw a couple of multi-car accidents. Like, they were right on top of each other the entire event.
And I think that just shows how this new downforce package for Bristol is pretty good for it. I mean, there was great racing all together all the way around. And, you know, with that late race restart, all right, and when I say late, I'm not talking, you know, 20 laps to go or 10 laps to go. No, it was 5 laps to go. On the jump, we had Chase Elliott and Joey Logano going for it. And, it didn't end up one of them winning. In fact, it was Brad Keselowski who won. But, in fact, those two finished on the last lead lap position. Chase Elliott finishing 22nd and Joey Logano finishing 21st. And they had some words with each other on pit road, which was, in my mind, kind of boring because they didn't take any jabs or anything. But it reminded me kind of Martinsville with Denny Hamlin just a couple of years ago, where those two had some words, except there was no crowd to cheer on Chase, and there was no shoving on the pit road or anything. But Chase Elliott seems to have issues with both big organizations, including Joe Gibbs Racing, and now maybe a little bit with Penske.
Well, and I got a preface for all my NASCAR fans out there. I'll be the first one to say that I do not like Joey Logano. I am not a big fan of how he drives. I'm not a big fan of some of his post-race comments. He's just not my cup of tea. But in this incident between him and Elliott, I got to take Logano's side. I mean, granted, I don't think it was, you know, intentional that the two made contact coming into the turn one and two. But Chase Elliott, he definitely made a mistake. And he dove in there where he really didn't have the grip and slid up into Logano and took them both out. And Logano was heated afterwards. You could tell how frustrated he was, and I was kind of disappointed that Chase looked like was going to try and sneak out of there and not actually talk to Logano. I was like, okay, Chase, you made a boneheaded move. You've called out other drivers when they make boneheaded moves. You know, you raked Denny Hamlin over the coals after he made a mistake in 2017. This time it's on you, dude. You got to own up to it. And for a second there, I legitimately thought he was going to walk away and not own up to the fact that he made the mistake in this one. Logano, you know, got to him before he could, but I was not pleased with how Mr. Elliott decided to handle the post-race on this one, considering how vocal he's been on other drivers who have made similar mistakes, you know, with him being the unfortunate victim in those circumstances. So I honestly was fully expecting it to come to blows. I feel like with the social distancing and the teams not being able to, you know, go back up their drivers, I think that had a lot to do with it being a pretty civil conversation. But you could tell the civility was right, you know, razor thin, because Logano looked like he was ready to just pound him one. And that would have been one of the few instances in my time watching NASCAR where I would have been on Logano's side if he had popped Chase Elliott. Because that does not happen often. I have to stress that right there, that it does not happen often that I'm taking Logano's side in anything. I was a little disappointed with how Chase, you know, handled himself. He eventually owned up to it. You know, he said in his post-race interviews that it was his mistake, but, you know, I really expected more out of him for owning up to it with Logano. So we'll see how that carries over, especially because it won't be that much longer before we're back on a short track. We're going to Atlanta this weekend, but next Wednesday we're going to Martinsville, the most beatenest, bangingest track in NASCAR. So,
yes,
you know, you can't forget about this little incident, because if given the choice, Martinsville is the place to make payback. So I want to stress to the fans out there, this is not going to be a minor incident, especially considering you got to keep a close eye on how they race each other at Atlanta, because anytime we have incidents like this, these drivers somehow, through karma, God's funny sense of irony, they always find a way to be right on top of each other, racing each other all race long the next week. And so it'll be really interesting to see how they race around each other and if there's any carryover into our next short track event just a week from tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, there was just so – and that was something, too. I was surprised to see, you know, Chase kind of not want to talk to him right away, kind of just want to leave, which you can't blame him because, I mean, he's already had an altercation with a driver earlier in a week ago or so, being Kyle Busch. And Joey handled that, I think, fairly well. So we might see – and I'm going to say it, we might see some retaliation, like you said, and it might be like what Matt Kenseth did to Joey Logano just a handful of years ago. I believe it was 2016, because Jeff Gordon got his final cup win. 2015. But That was some good racing action, though. We don't want to, you know, say it wasn't good racing action. It was fantastic racing action. It just was great. But, you know, looking down the list of cars, the top 20 has a couple surprising ones. One of them being Timmy Hill, who during this second off season that a lot of people are calling it, won the championship for the iRacing Pro Invitational, finishing 19th, top 20 for that team on the lead lap, a fantastic run for that very small team, I may add, and Daniel Suarez getting an 18th finish for Gaunt Brothers. I mean, it's two small teams getting really big finishes and a track that small teams tend to have some fantastic ones, one of them being Matthew Benedetto, and both Levine Family Racing last year and just a few years ago, BK Racing getting a sixth place finish at this very race, I believe.
And that's what you got to love about short track racing with the current car that we have. Obviously, on the mile and a half tracks, if your team has got a lower budget, you just won't have the all raw out speed that some of the other bigger teams have. But at a track like Bristol, raw out speed doesn't help you. You need to have a car that's set up and gripped, you know, grips well and corners well. And that's where these small teams can, you know, put some of that shade tree mechanic experience, some of that short track experience to good use and get a car that really handles well. Because if you have a car that handles well, you're going to be so much better off than a driver who's relying on raw out speed at a short track. And that's where drivers like Timmy Hill and Daniel Suarez can really rise to the occasion. And like you said, Timmy Hill did himself a huge favor by participating in that Pro Invitational League. That got his name in the public mainstream conscious, like, had people talking about this driver that only the really, really devout, you know, tune in and week out NASCAR driver fans would know by name. And so by doing this, he's putting himself in the limelight to attract more sponsors. More sponsors means more money for the team, and more money for the team means better race cars. So I'm really glad to see that he's reaping the benefits of putting his name out there, showing that he's good for the sponsors, showing that he's got good public relations skills, and, you know, has the talent that his equipment up to this point has not been able to let him reflect. So I hope that they keep building on this, because this is definitely a step in the right direction. And we haven't really talked about it much. Our winner was Brad Keselowski. And for the second time this season, Keselowski has gotten a win off a Chase Elliott mistake, which has got to really stick in the side of Chase Elliott fans. But for Brad Keselowski, he's like, man, I got to go. Vegas is reopened, right? Vegas is open back up. I'm going to go down there and test my luck, because literally he's had good cars, but both wins came from just being in position to capitalize on others making a mistake. And that's sometimes, you know, what you need from a season. A lot of drivers say it time in and time out, I'd rather be lucky than good, because luck sometimes wins a lot more of these races than the driver who has the fastest car.
That definitely is for sure. And, you know, Brad himself, you know, was by the way, a driver for Hendrick for a short stint before he went over to Penske. And I think one big thing for Brad is that he's in a contract year. There is no say where he's going to be. He could end up in the 48. He could end up back in the 2. We don't know. And, you know, like you said, two races where a driver, Chase Elliott, is leading, he's out there, he's getting it, and then a late break caution, and then a restart. You know, by the way, these are two different scenarios we had. For the Coke 600, Chase was leading two laps to go. His teammate William Byron spins out because of a punctured tire, and the decision, do we pit, do we not? And by the way, that's a decision that's very hard to make at some points, because with you not pitting, everyone else will pit. You pit, you'll have some guys that don't. It's one of those hard, very hard things. And Chase came back with that, with technically a third place finish, but was awarded second because of Jimmy Johnson car being disallowed. And then this one, Chase Elliott racing really hard with Brad Keselowski's teammate Joey Logano, and both of them just getting caught up, and then them to get the win. You know, Brad capitalizes on other people's mistakes, and big. I wouldn't call the 600 a mistake. I would call that calculation that would have lost Brad the race if the race was another two laps, if that. But in all honesty, Brad is, and he's a heck of a wheel man. Not, you know, he got his first win with a partial scheduled for holiday. Talked about that race. Then did a partial schedule for Hendrick. Then went to Penske and has been there ever since, winning not just races but also championships, or a championship for him. Brad, I think he's wanting to show, hey, I'm still a force to be reckoned with. Guys, take a look at me right now.
And honestly, this is the time to do it, because like you said, he's in a contract year. This is a very pivotal moment in Brad Keselowski's career. He's been a veteran on the tour now. Like you said, he's won multiple championships for the captain, Roger Penske, the 2010 Xfinity Championship, as well as the 2012 Cup Series Championship. And he did so driving in his third full-time season, a mark that makes you think of Jeff Gordon when you think of all-time champions. And Keselowski being in such a precarious situation with not knowing where he's going to race next year, he is only doing himself a favor by racking up these wins, because nothing speaks harder when you're in a contract negotiation or if you're farming out your options to other teams than saying, hey, I know your program is good. I can make it better. I am a race-winning talent. I am winning races currently, and I am performing with the best of them. You know, his 2012 Cup Series Championship alone would be able to help his case wherever he lands for 2021. But the fact that he's winning multiple races a season, and in the last 3 years, he's been raking in the crown jewel events. He started off by winning the 2018 Southern 500, backed that up last year by taking his first Brickyard 400 crown, and then this year winning the 2020 Coke 600. He's just one Daytona 500 trophy away from going full Thanos and having all the rings. And, you know, when you are in a contract negotiating position, you know, he's holding all the cards right now. In my opinion, I get the position that Roger Penske's in. He doesn't want to get rid of Logano because Logano's probably got a few more years on Keselowski as far as age is concerned. Ryan Blaney, while he's not shown the domination that his two teammates have, and he's kind of struggled, you know, gelling with his crew, Ryan Blaney is a winner, and if he's given the right situation, will be a winner for years to come. And he's obviously, from a youth standpoint, the future of that organization. So I know he doesn't want to lose those two, so that leaves kind of Brad Keselowski as being the odd man out. And when you have a driver like Austin Cindric coming up through the development pipeline with the strong connections within the Penske organization, with his dad being a longtime Penske employee, you know, it's put Roger in a very precarious situation. Obviously, he wants to continue growing his team and wants to invest, you know, in the future of the team, and that comes by investing in driver development and investing in younger drivers and building your program around the future. But, you know, it's hard when you have a really stacked house already on that organization with three very capable winning drivers winning week in and week out. That doesn't make these negotiations any easier. Plus, if you're in Roger Penske's position, if you do make the decision to release Brad Keselowski and opt for, you know, bringing in the younger talent, you risk losing one of the hottest shoes in NASCAR right now, and risking the probability of watching that driver beat you and your team week in and week out next season, especially if you pair Keselowski with the lineage and the history that is Hendrick Motorsports, which seems like a lot of the rumors are pointing to. Like, it's a lot weighing right now on the captain. But I know Brad Keselowski being the driver that he is and everything that Roger's done for his career, if Roger's got an offer for him, Brad will be back in that two car. It doesn't matter how much money the other teams throw at him. It doesn't matter what they promise as far as contract deals. If the captain is offering Brad a position back in the fold with Team Penske, Brad will join that. We'll take that option because Roger was the one who gave him a chance when no one else would. When Hendrick didn't have any room for him in the Cup Series, Roger gave him the clear-cut path to being the Cup Series champion that he is today. And Brad Keselowski takes so much pride in being one of the winningest drivers to ever strap into Team Penske equipment. When he beat Mark Donahue's mark last year and took the crown as the most winningest Penske driver, you could just see in his face the pride that that brought to him, how much it meant, because he respects Roger to his very core. And Roger's the kind of guy you want to perform well for. So if Roger has the option for him, Brad is going to stay in that two car. But if there isn't any room at the end, I feel bad for Penske because I feel like Brad's going to be the driver that gets away, is the one that got away, because wherever Brad ends up next year is going to be a winning organization, and Brad will bring whatever organization he's driving for next year into victory circle.
Yeah, I mean, Brad himself, not just a championship driver in the Cup Series, a well-rounded great guy, a great racer, one hell of a wheelman in trucks, Xfinity, anything you put him in, he can definitely win. And looking forward, it's still uncertain. I mean, there are strong rumors of where he could go, and that's the thing, could. But I think the fact that, you know, Penske gave him that big break, if something comes up and Roger's like, hey, I want you in the two car for another X amount of years, or hey, I want you in this car for another year or so, he'll do it. But then I think Brad will start to think, okay, well, what does that leave for the future after that? Which will be a smart thinking move for him. But, you know, running down the rest of this list, because there were 40 cars that were in this, a full stack field. Again, Brad Keselowski winning. Clint Bowyer coming home with a second place finish. Really good for him. Jimmy Johnson still on a strong streak. This mid-break thing we had has changed Jimmy, I feel, because now he's kind of running up there a lot, finishing third. Kyle Busch finishing fourth. Eric Jones, a very strong finish of fifth. Austin Dillon finishing sixth. Kurt Busch finishing seventh. William Byron finishing eighth. Christopher Bell finishing ninth, the highest rookie, by the way. Bubba Wallace with a 10th place finish, one of his better finishes so far this year. Kevin Harvick finishing 11th, Ryan Preece finishing 12th, John Hunter Nemechek finishing 13th, Michael McDowell finishing 14th, Ryan Newman finishing 15th, Matt Kenseth finishing 16th, Denny Hamlin finishing 17th, Daniel Suarez again finishing 18th, won a great run for the Gauntlet brothers, and Timmy Hill finishing 19th, a great run for MBM Motorsports. And Martin Truex rounding out the top 20, Joey Logano finishing 21st, Chase Elliott finishing 22nd, Chris Buescher finishing 23rd, Brendan Poole having a great run for his small team finishing 24th, J.J. Yaley in the 7, that's the best finish that car has had so far this year, 5th. It just recently started after the 7 car came back after not racing for quite a few years. Garrett Smithley finishing 26th, Ben Hoff finishing 27th, BJ McLeod finishing 28th, a best finish again for that team and only their third start. Eric Almirola finishing 31st, Corey LaJoy finishing 32nd, Joey Gase finishing 33rd. By the way, the car he drove was built in less than 2 days, so it really had a quick turnaround time. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. finishing 34th. Cole Custer having not the best run for himself, finishing 35th. Tyler Reddick, the worst rookie to finish, finishing 36th. Alex Bowman finishing 37th. Bailey Curry finishing 38th. Ty Dillon finishing 39th. And Ryan Blaney finishing 40th.
And before we wrap up, put the bow on the Food City 500, one last story we really have to talk about. Bubba Wallace and that 43 team. That's the second top 10 that they picked up for that organization. And what a turnaround. If you've looked at the growth of Richard Petty Motorsports in the 3 years that they've had Bubba Wallace as the driver, they were hit hard when Smithfield pulled their funding and went with Eric Almirola to Stewart Haas Racing in 2018. And, you know, you throw in the fact that it was also that same year, 2018, when they brought on Bubba, a rookie, so he was still trying to figure out the Cup Series. They also made this manufacturer switch from Ford to Chevrolet at the same time Chevy brought in the new Camaro. And you just have a recipe for disaster. Richard Petty Motorsports fell off a cliff, and they have been digging out of that hole ever since. Last year was definitely a marked improvement over 2018. You saw a lot more consistency. Bubba was definitely coming into his own as a driver, but that team was still well behind the eight ball as far as what they were needing for a competition standpoint. However, you got to love Worldwide Technologies, the company that's come on board and save the 43 car. They have been pouring in much needed funds to give that team the financial boost that they need to start working on the cars more, getting better equipment, really tuning those 43 Chevrolets to be as fast as they can be. You couple that with the brand new Camaro ZL1, it's helping all the Chevy programs as a whole perform better. And we have Bubba Wallace, for the first time in his Cup career, really with the strong prospect of maybe finally getting that first win. He's still struggling for consistency, which has been Bubba Wallace's Achilles heel throughout his NASCAR program. He's shown speed in every division he's run in. He's shown the ability to run with the top guys and be a race-winning caliber driver, but the consistency has just never quite been there in any of his full-time campaigns. So that's still kind of the crux of his 2020 season, the thing that he's still fighting against, but you can see a much-needed improvement in the overall performance of those cars. His communication between his spotter, Freddie Kraft, is great. And I really liked that they brought in crew chief Jerry Baxter this year. Baxter was his crew chief in the Truck Series when he was winning races with Kyle Busch. They're a proven team. They communicate well. And I really feel like that team pairing, coupled with the fact that they've got much-needed cash flow, helping improve the overall quality of the cars, is really going to help Bubba Wallace come into his own. He may not really emerge as a consistent perennial week-in, week-out favorite in 2020, but I really feel like they're laying the foundation of a possible breakout season in 2021. I just really hope for that organization, for the legacy of the Petty family, and for the legacy of that 43 number, that we can see Bubba Wallace continue to improve and continue to grow into hopefully one of the sport's next top elite drivers, because I would love nothing more than to see Bubba Wallace winning races week in and week out, because you know how much fun those Victory Lane interviews would be if we got Bubba Wallace as a weekly winner. Because, man, he rivals Clint Bowyer as far as his pure charisma behind the camera. He is just absolute TV gold. Interviewers like myself love a driver like Bubba Wallace, because when you get a quote from him, you know it's honest, you know it's full of emotion, and you know it's going to be a great soundbite every time. I'm really encouraged by the direction that team is showing, and I just hope they keep building on this momentum. And also, you got to give a shout-out to Worldwide Tech. Even though that they're footing the bill and they're sponsoring the bulk of the races, half of their sponsorship program, they are donating the hood space to bring awareness to the Victory Junction Racing Gang Camp. I mean, how could you not applaud what they're doing there? Even though they're the sponsor, they're giving up their time on the hood to promote what has become one of the most wonderful charities in all of the NASCAR world. And I applaud them so much for doing that, for not only helping NASCAR's most storied team rise to prominence again, but also giving back to the community and donating some of that hood space to allow such a great charity organization time in the spotlight to shine.
For sure. I mean, Bubba Wallace, not just a great racer, he has won in the NASCAR Camp World Truck Series, I believe, four times. I remember being there at one at Gateway in St. Louis, Missouri, my first race ever working. But him, just as a driver in general, winning at Martinsville, winning at Eldora, winning at Michigan, having fun with it. And, he's definitely stepped up. I think he's gotten a lot more comfortable. And I use that term a lot because that is something that a driver has to be, is comfortable, not just with the car, but with the team, and he's really gotten there. Not only getting Richard Petty's autograph tattooed on his body, but also with getting great finishes like that. So can't wait to see what he'll be able to pull off. But with that, we had a Monday night race for the Xfinity Series, which ended up with teammates getting into it and another winner, or a repeat winner this year, Noah Gregson, getting a win at Bristol. It's kind of surprising, but he actually is pretty decent on short tracks, if you think about it. His first win ever came at Martinsville in the Truck Series, and when I say his first win in a top-tier Series Cup Xfinity truck, his first win coming at Martinsville in the Truck Series for Kyle Busch Motorsports, and now getting his second win. His first one was earlier this year at Daytona, and now he has this one at Bristol. It was one hell of a race, and he did not disappoint, to say the least.
And you gotta love his candor and his honesty in his post-race interviews. He straight up admitted that last year he struggled. He did not, you know, figure out the Xfinity cars that fast. And at the Bristol races in particular, he pointed out to, he was, in his words, garbage. He just was not competitive at all, and that was simply not the case at all Monday night. He was constantly in the thick of things, top five, pretty much primarily the entire night. And that's what led him to being able to capitalize. And I know a lot of fans out there, especially the media members that were broadcasting the race, put a lot of blame on Noah Gregson for the contact that between him and his teammate Justin Allgaier that ended up putting Allgaier in the wall and, you know, paving the way for Noah Gregson to take the victory. But I did not see that way at all. Noah Gregson had position underneath Justin Allgaier. Allgaier came down to kind of pinch him, you know, use that side draft. And to me, I feel like more of the blame was on Allgaier for not leaving a lot of room for Noah Gregson. Allgaier was doing what he needed to do. He needed to slow Noah Gregson's momentum and capitalize that on that lost momentum to really carry him through the corner. But by pinching Noah Gregson down, you know, as hard as he could on that bottom lane, and with the bottom lane showing a lot of drivers losing grip and sliding up into other competitors, I fully vehemently believe that Allgaier is more at fault for that wreck. It was a pure racing incident, but I feel like people are pointing the finger at the wrong driver for being the cause of that wreck, and that really bummed me out because Noah, he's had a great season, you know, by leaps and bounds over what he had last year, but he's found himself in a little bit of controversy. He had that incident at Vegas where there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He blatantly wrecked Myatt Snyder, you know, and took a lot of heat for that, and he's taken a lot of criticism for his aggressive driving style, which to me is not fair criticism. You know, a lot of drivers, you know, you think of the Kyle Busches, you think of the Ross Chastain, they are praised for how they race aggressive, how they race all out week in and week out. And, you know, since that contact with Myatt, I feel like Gregson has taken a lot of unfair heat for how he drives and was, you know, pointed at being the blame for that incident, which to me is just not a fair blame at all. I mean, if anything, it should be 50-50 at the bare minimum, but I feel like more of the burden is on Allgaier for pinching him down there, you know, and really not giving him any room to race. Because if you saw the corner before that, Allgaier was clear up at the top lane, Noah was clear at the bottom, Noah had position, and I think the criticism being lobbed at him by people saying that he caused the crash is completely unwarranted.
After rewatching that incident a few times, it truly was a racing incident, and Noah himself, you know, he can wheel. You know, there was a time where I was thinking he's just a money kid, and it's still he's still kind of early in his career, but getting two wins, two different kind of tracks, it's kind of like okay, he's got something going for him. But it's definitely, you know, it's not like he did that and only led the last three laps. In fact, he led 55 laps. It was him leading 55 laps. Harrison Burton, who finished fourth, leading 81 laps. Ryan Sieg, who the name you don't often hear leading laps, leading six. Justin Haley leading eight laps. And then Justin Allgaier leading 156. You know, that's half of the race, leading 156 laps. And then Riley Herbst finishing leading four laps. So, you know, just to put in perspective, between the two JGR drivers, they led 201 laps combined, or 211 laps combined. I'm doing math in my head, and I'm too tired for that right now. So it's not like they weren't you know, one and two, or they weren't, you know, just a couple laps led. They led a majority of the race. Junior Motorsports did, and you know that. In all honesty, that was just a racing incident. And will we see retaliation? I really hope not. It just makes for a fun competition meeting today or tomorrow, whenever they decide to do that for those guys.
And, you know, I've been very impressed with a lot of drivers this season, Gregson being one of them. After last year, I kind of wrote him off. You know, he had a very tough season in his debut driving that number 9 car with Junior Motorsports. He was taking over the championship ride vacated by Tyler Reddick. So, obviously, he got a lot of pressure on his shoulders heading into 2019. And by all accounts, he underperformed. Yes, he made the playoffs, got several top 10s, but he just was not – the week-in, week-out, you know, contender that we were used to seeing from that particular car, from the 9 car. Because you think about the drivers that he took over for. Chase Elliott won a championship. William Byron won a championship. Tyler Reddick, championship. So this ride that he took over is arguably one of the best, most premier rides that Junior Motorsports has to offer. But going into the season, it's been a completely different Noah Gregson. He doesn't have, you know, the full season backing of sponsor that he did last year. And I thought that would hinder him, but if anything, it's motivated him. He's been consistently week in, week out in the top 5, dicing it out for wins in the conversation. And if you look at the point standings, he's 9 points behind Chase Briscoe for the point lead. That is just a huge difference from where we found that program a year ago. And I just think as he continues to mature as a driver, continues to work on that crew chief dynamic between him and Dave Ellens and on that communication, he might honestly be the surprise of the season, because a lot of people were looking at Harrison Burton, Chase Briscoe, Ross Chastain, Austin Cindric as being, you know, the drivers to watch. And while they've definitely dominated a lot of the conversation this year, Noah Gregson has been quietly, you know, building up strong finishes, raking in the points, and you just can't take your eyes off that number 9 machine. When the number 9 car for Junior Motorsports is hooked up and is found their groove, there is no team in the garage area that can beat Dave Ellens and crew on their best day. And if they get, you know, Noah Gregson comfortable with that team, get him the experience that he needs and get him the confidence that he is one of the elite talents in the sport, you got to look out, because that is going to be a potent pairing. And I'm so happy to see that turnaround, because Noah is such a nice guy. I met him last year at the track. He's every bit as personable, down-to-earth, funny, charismatic as he is in person, as he appears to be on TV. And he is a driver that you love to see do well and represent the sport, because he genuinely loves the sport. He loves being a NASCAR driver. He loves interacting with his fans, and he loves putting on a show for those fans. The two victory celebrations that we've been given by Noah Gregson in his 2 wins this year were some of the most entertaining and memorable so far in the 2020 season. And hell, he was putting on a show for fans that weren't there. He was climbing the fence. He was, you know, whooping and trying to motivate the crowd that he knows was watching at home, doing just great burnouts. That is the personality that, you know, that fires up a base. And that is the type of personality that people will tune in and week out. So I'm so happy to see he's finally getting the results to kind of back that up, because he's a driver I want to see for a long time, because he makes races exciting.
He does, and, you know, just to put it out there, there are a lot of drivers out there who race and who party hard just as well, but we do have to say, you know, the whole field this week was stacked with some incredible people, and just looking at the top 10 alone, there's 2 guys that stand out that you don't normally see in the top 10. Now, I'll say Matt Schneider kind of is fifth in RCR equipment full-time in 2 different cars. He's running for Ryan Sieg Racing in the 93 or the 38, whichever one that weekend. But he finished fifth. We had Brandon Brown and Josh Williams. Now, those are 2 drivers you don't often see that much up there in the front pack, you know, at non-super speedway races. Brandon Brown is a young man who graduated from there, and to bring home a 7th place finish there is incredible. And then Josh Williams, who, you know, again, you hardly ever hear his name up there in the top finishing ninth for his very small team for Mario Gosselin. That's incredible. And then Jeremy Clemens, how could I forget him? The South Carolina boy, finishing eighth. So we had three guys really finish in the top 10 that you don't see that often unless it's kind of like a super speedway track.
And honestly, that's been the most rewarding thing about the 2020 Xfinity Series season so far for me. Routinely, week in and week out, you're seeing drivers like Brandon Brown racking up solid top 10s. And Brandon Brown has actually found himself solidly in chase position, you know, to maybe qualify for the playoffs this year. He's sitting right now 12th in the point standing, so really good effort by that team. And then you've got Jeremy Clements. I am a big Clements fan. I've been following his career since I started covering races at the Speedway and actually got to interview him several years in a row. I love the fact that he drives for his own family team, that they build their own equipment, they build their own engines. And that is the kind of stories that are so great to see. And Josh Williams coming out of nowhere, Mario Gosselin getting a top 10 with my boy Josh Williams. And if you've never met Mario Gosselin, or if you don't remember his time in the Truck Series, man, you are missing out. What you want to talk about a personality. God, you love to see these smaller teams getting their time in the sun, and that's what the Xfinity Series is about. That's why it was important a few years ago when NASCAR limited the amount of times the Cup Series could come down and double dip, quote unquote, because even though it was great, it was packing the fans, you know, bringing, you know, much needed exposure to the Xfinity Series, it was completely, you know, killing the momentum of these smaller teams and completely hogging the spotlight from great stories like this. And I love seeing it happen. I love seeing teams that have, you know, basically made their bet as being a prominent fixture in the Xfinity Series getting their due. And I hope to continue seeing results like this where we get to see drivers popped up and getting much needed and much deserved finishes in the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, just an incredible amount of is one thing. If you give them better equipment, you'll definitely see them up there racing. Josh Williams actually was an ARCA driver for his own team, won quite a few races, including in Nashville. So definitely will, that's for sure. But you also have like AJ Allmendinger running a part-time schedule for a colleague racing. By the way, I've worked for BJ myself. He owns his own team. He doesn't run his own equipment that often. Instead, he runs for Sonny Davis Racing. He finishes 11th, and then 12th is his own car, Vinny Miller, and the 7th. If you look at the top 15, there's so many small-time teams that I mean, just to go, you know, from 10th back, you have BJ McLeod in 11th, Vinny Miller in 12th, Joe Graff Jr., which, by the way, about time he's done something because he's not that good of a driver. Timmy Hill in the 61, finishing 14th, and Jeffrey Earnhardt making his start back for the rest of the season in the 0, finishing 15th. I mean, that top 15 is a wide variety. A lot of them are smaller teams that don't often get to compete that hard, finishing a lot better than a lot of other teams who have a lot more money backing them up, including Gibbs, Colleague, and Junior Motorsports.
And speaking of Colleague, man, my heart broke for that team because they had three stout Chevrolets, and all three of them ran into trouble. It started early in the event. I believe it was lap seven, the number 10 of Ross Chastain. He got loose coming off the corner, ended up getting hit by a couple drivers trying to avoid him. Michael Annette made contact with the back, and Chastain's night was done from there. He went laps down and was never able to recover. He ended up coming across the line in 28th. His teammate, on the other hand, they were doing well. A.J. Allmendinger and Justin Haley were in the mix throughout the event. Allmendinger ran into trouble the next of the Colleague drivers. He got into a bit of a scuffle. He went a lap down trying to make repairs, but that rally to 10th place was super impressive, and you got to love it for A.J., especially because that team missed out on their first attempt at the Daytona race back in February, so a much-needed rebound for the third car for Matt Colleague. But obviously the biggest heartbreak was for Justin Haley. He was running so well all Monday night. It looked like everything was lining up for Justin to finally get that breakthrough win in the Xfinity Series. For Matt Colleague's you know, premier number 11 car, the car that started that organization, maybe finally getting its maiden win in the Xfinity Series. It all looked like it might be lining up, but a couple bad restarts and being put in a bad position unfortunately led him to being mixed up in a pretty nasty incident with about 53 laps to go, damaged the front end of his car, and he was never able to recover. But you can't say the colleague boys were not there to race. They had stout cars, and if they can avoid the bad luck next time, I feel like you got to keep your eye on them when we go back to Bristol in the fall, because, man, I really thought it was going to be Justin Haley getting that first win in the 11 car for colleague racing, but just came up just a little short.
The cautions, by the way, that were out, one and the 1-3, very competitive cars getting into it early into turn four. Then you had, you know, it just was astounding to see some of those bigger guys just kind of have issues. Out well for a lot of the underdogs that we enjoy seeing, like BJ, like Brandon, like Jeremy, like Ryan, even though Ryan Teague only finished 16th, he still was up there, you know, finished three laps down, but still finishing up there, led laps, was going great, had a great run for him. By the way, there was a driver making his first start ever in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, Carson Ware, who, if you know who Cody Ware is, he was a Xfinity, a Cup truck. Basically, he ran everything and anything. He now runs in the Asia Le Mans Series and has qualified for the 24 Hours of Le Mans. That he made his first ever start in the 07 for Daughtry Racing, or Bobby Daughtry Racing. He finished 22nd, which isn't too bad for him. He's never made a start in the trucks. He's never made a start in K&N. He's done a lot more late model stuff for Rick Weinstein. So come home 22nd in the first start, you know, finishing 289 laps out of 303, that's a pretty good run for yourself.
And honestly, there was a couple drivers that were making their first starts. My heart broke. I was trying to get his name. Patrick Emmerling. He was making his debut. The first driver aside from Brett Moffitt to wield the number 02 for Auer Motorsports. A team that's been quite impressive, honestly, in the first few races with Brett driving the car. He had a lot to live up to, and he was running solidly, but unfortunately he got caught up in an incident that took his car out of the running on lap 140, and I was gutted because he was having such a good race, and you know, it's the deal sometimes. It's not how he wanted his inaugural debut to go, but to me, I think he turned the right head, and if he gets another shot in that 0-2 car, I hope the next outing will be a lot better for him.
I think it definitely will, you know. That was just – now, I will say this. There was some speculation from either him or for someone else saying that he was intentionally wrecked. It's hard to say because there isn't a lot of footage from it, but hopefully he'll come back. Brett, who, by the way, was a driver I met this afternoon when I went to the Charlotte area and talked to him about all that. He was excited to be back racing, not just in the Truck Series, but also in the Xfinity Series for the O2R Racing. Talked very highly of that team, so it's very good to see them. This track, Bristol, if you don't know, it's a party and a half. I was lucky enough a couple years ago, 2018, to go and party. No, it was last year. It was last year I went and was able to party and hang out with people. Nope, it was the year before. I take it back, 2018. I'll get my year straight at some point. But Bristol is one heck of a party zone. It's one crazy place to go. And the racing action, even without fans, and I mean this, even without fans, truly is amazing. I mean, I can't think of a better Xfinity race in the past few years than this one at Bristol.
And honestly, that's exactly what we wanted on the Monday show now. That was our first, you know, primetime Monday race that really got us going, you know, like the Daytona 500 did back in 2012. And so I was really excited that it lived up to that billing, and hopefully any new fans that tuned in They were quite pleased with what they saw, because that was definitely the kind of race you want new fans to see. And we're getting down short on time, so let's get you through that full field rundown. Noah Gregson was your leader.
I'm just saying, please go through it.
Right. Noah Gregson was your winner in the number 9 Chevrolet. Chase Briscoe followed him across the line in second, continuing that strong momentum the 98 car has been on this season. Brandon Jones continues to impress me. He's really found something in the latter part of 2019, and he's carried that momentum into 2020 and stepped up to be the veteran driver at Joe Gibbs Racing. So glad to see he's continuing to perform week in and week out. He brought the number 19 home in third. Harrison Burton continuing his impressive rookie run in fourth. Myatt Snider in a very good run for the 21 team in a strong fifth-place showing for that rookie. He continues to impress and turn heads. Daniel Hemric, a strong sixth place. Brandon Brown, like we said, seventh. Jeremy Clements, eighth. Josh Williams in ninth. A.J. Allmendinger rounded out the top 10. B.J. McLeod came across the line in 11th. Vinny Miller in 12th. Joe Graff Jr. in 13th. Timmy Hill, 14th. Jeffrey Earnhardt in 15th. Ryan Sieg, 16th. Justin Haley in 17th. Justin Allgaier came across the line a bitter, disappointing 18th. Colby Howard in 19th. And Bailey Curry rounded out your top 20. In 21st, we had Cody Vanderwall making a very impressive run for Jimmy Means. That independent team owner has been around the sport for years, so you've got to love seeing that 52 car run well. So great job by Cody. 22nd went to Carson Ware, like Zach said earlier, a very impressive debut for that young driver. Tommy Joe Martins with 23rd. Chad Fincham came across the line 24th. Matt Mills in 25th, Jesse Little 26th, Riley Herbst. That finish is not indicative of how well Riley was running. He was consistently in the top five, really looking for a breakout career-making night, but unfortunately got wrapped up in an incident with about 50 laps to go, relegating him to a 27th place finish. Ross Chastain, we remarked earlier about the troubles he ran into. He came across the line 28th, Patrick Emmerling in 29th, and Mason Massey in 30th. Ronnie Bassett Jr. came across the line 31st, Joe Nemechek 32nd, Alex LeBay came home in 33rd, Stephen Light 34th, Jeff Green came home in 35th, Austin Cindric a disappointing 36th, and Michael Annett finished in 37th. Both of those two drivers involved in that lap 7 incident that ruined the night for Ross Chastain. So there you have it, your full field rundown. It was a very tight packed race, 12 cautions over the course of the 300 laps. And we had about 847 green flag passes.
So 3 minutes left. We have two races we'll cover from this week, the weekend coming up. Where are we going again? We're going to Atlanta, right?
Yep, we're doing three races from Atlanta. We got a truck race and Xfinity race doubleheader on Saturday, and then the cup race on Sunday.
That's right. They're doing. I can't wait. So this was actually a scheduled race that we were supposed to have, but this is when COVID really kind of hit. NASCAR originally was going to do no practice, just start the race as is, and then they just pulled it all together. So thing we want to state too: the truck series. Originally, there was stated that they were going to do a qualifying session for them. They are not anymore, so now they will just be going off 0.7 trucks or 47 trucks. Again, trucks will go home automatically that did not have points, so it will be interesting. Right now, there's 37 cars on the Xfinity list, and we still have a full stack 40-car list. I can't remember the last time we had this many 40 cars. 40 cars starting back to back to back. I think it's been a hot while since we've had that.
It's been a while, but it's definitely something you like to see. It shows overall health in the sport. And for the Truck Series race, for the second time since they've come back, they're turning drivers away. They've expanded the field to 40 trucks, and they still have to turn drivers away. Unfortunately, one of those being David Ragan. He was looking to make his first start of the season for Front Row Motorsports in a one-off event, maybe looking to take on Kyle Busch and that bounty, but there wasn't any room in the end, unfortunately, for the number 17 Ford, so he will not be participating this week. But while it sucks for Reagan, you gotta love that there's been that much interest rekindled in the sport, and we're seeing that many small independent teams coming up to try and get their shot at the top, because that's really what makes the sport healthy.
Well, guys, I tell you what, we got 36 seconds left. It's been great being back with everyone this week, and Atlanta's going to be fun. Give you 10 seconds of peace to say goodbye. Brady.
Hey, everyone. It was great tuning in. The country is hurting right now. We're all hurting. Do what you can to be a positive influence in your community. Learn from what you see going on around you and just don't turn a blind eye. Start speaking up for those who can't speak up for themselves.
All right, Zach, you got 9 seconds. What you got?
I'm putting pants on and going back to bed.
All right. This is Dr. John. We'll see you next week. The Charlotte Line. Take care.
Bye.